Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Friedman. Thank you to the Franks, of course, again, also for hosting, for the Birnbaums, for arranging. Really, the thank you goes out to you, because parenting is an adventure, as you all know from the fact that you're here already, that you already have children, and you know that it is a difficult task and one that takes a lifetime of working on, constantly being involved and working on it. And as I was just joking to, I know some of you I have not yet had a chance to meet, but hopefully we'll have a chance over the course of this evening to get to know all of you a little bit. As I was commenting before, I left my house at about 7:05, 7:10 to get here, so it's right in the midst of, I had about 4 out of the 6 kids have eaten, 2 out of the 6 had been bathed, and I say to my wife, see ya, I'm going to go teach a class on parenting. And that's the reality, because you probably all did the same thing, because it's 7:30, and you know, some of you maybe have kids who are asleep, most of you probably don't, and this is life. Life has gotten really, really busy and crazy, and if you want to like learn something about parenting, you got to go and you leave your kids in order to go, and your kids are saying like, I'm right here, like, where are you going if you want to parent? And that's how we go. I'll make a little plug. I have this little series, a 3-minute parenting through the Parsha series. It's online, and the reason why I created that is because I have tried workshops like this. This is a phenomenal turnout in Tocco Hills, where I have a much larger population to draw from. I was not able to get nearly this amount of people because to come out all the time, people couldn't do it. So I figured, who's got time? I'll come to you in like really short sound bites. 3 minutes. And that's what it took to get people to actually invest in parenting. You know, everybody wants to and everybody needs to. Everybody knows that they want to. But the fact that you're here, that's great. Let me get started. Let's get right into things. Let me ask by asking a question. Imagine, I don't know the ages of the children that are represented here, but let's assume they're little right now. And if I were to tell you that at the age of 9 or 10, that your children were going to be sent away. I can make it really dramatic, which I won't do, especially the introduction that Rabbi Friedman just gave, but less dramatic. They're just going to be sent away to some, they've been chosen to be some experimental subject in some government program, and you're not going to have any contact with them. Nothing Jewish, no Judaism. You have 8 or 9 years, and then you know, that's it, they're gone. You might not ever see them again. How would you parent differently? I want to think about this. How would you parent differently if you knew that at the age of 9, maybe 10, that was it? That's what you had. Some suggestions. Throw. What would you do differently?
He was angry.
He was angry? Okay, that's one thing. That's an element of how you would treat them. What else?
Yeah, take them out as much as you can.
Take them out. Why? Why?
Because it's happy and fun.
Okay, so that's one aspect. Quality time because it's happy and fun. What else?
You have to plant more seeds, if you will, because
that's what I'm looking for, right?
Next day.
Because at the end of the day, we really want to impart something to our children also. And if you knew, if we knew, that for some reason we had a limited time to impart that, so then we would take advantage of our time in a different way. Right now, we all know that we have limited time until children grow up. We want them to leave the house. We don't want them living, right? It's the great irony of parenting that we want them to get up and leave. And that's success. Success is that they get up, they get married, they start their own families, just like all of you have done, leaving your parents' home and starting your own families. So that's what we want from them, and we want them to be with the messages and the values, Jewish or whatever it may be, we want to impart. If I knew I was limited, 9, 10 years old, I'm a very different parent than a lot of them, because I need to impart all that information. Put that on the shelf for a second to think about it. I want to share a thought that I heard from Rabbi Jonathan Rosenblatt. He's the Rav in New York, the RJC, the Riverdale Jewish Community. It's a large shul. He's what's known as a rabbi's rabbi. He's the rabbi that the rabbis like to call for advice, for information. So I heard from a lecture he was given recently, described the new world that we live in. We live in a new world. Technology has changed everything. Pre-industrial revolution, even going back 100 years or so, what created the power of the home was the male. And the reason why the male was in power is because he was strong. and he could physically plow the fields and carry the sack of potatoes from the field in. With the industrial, I'm giving you a very brief, in the Industrial Revolution, we shifted from brute force to a lot more of a skill set, and the shift, the balance of power in society and the home changed because you didn't have to be a male brute force to be successful or to be a breadwinner. You just needed to have certain skills, and that's increased till today. In the technology world that we live in, it's not even just skill, but it's just knowledge of technology. And what that's done to us and to our children is it's not uncommon in any home that a parent will say to their 5-year-old, certainly their 7, 10, 12-year-old for sure, how do I use this? That's standard, right? Because technology is moving so fast. We're just like trying to keep up, and they're at the cutting edge, which means there's a very funny power shift which has taken place in the home, which is just what, this is not news as you're hearing this, but if you think about it, what it's created is where very often in a home, a parent is actually asking the child for information. Well, what does that do from the child's perspective? It's a very interesting thing. And that the child knows that they talk about people, they know they're texting over there, they have their whole language, they know when their parents are in the room, and we need them because we need to keep up, and it's really hard for those of us who have to like work for a living to also keep up with how fast things are going. So not only are they sometimes on the cutting edge and we need them, the technology they have is addictive. And this we are aware of also. You've for sure seen people who just they can't get off their phones. The idea of being alone with yourself in your own thoughts doesn't exist if you own a smartphone. It doesn't. There's so much stuff to do that we actually never spend time on our own, and our children are growing up in that world. They're growing up in a world where there is constant stimulation. My two-year-old picks up a book. You know, you guys know what books are. My two-year-old picks up a book and starts doing this to it. There's no work, Daddy. Now, I look at it and say, like, what is this world coming to? But he thinks it's normal because he's got a couple smartphones and iPads in the house, and he thinks it's normal that you get to do this with your finger and like things move all over the place. And like a book, like broken. But they're living in a world in which they are, in a certain way, the balance of power in the home has shifted, and in which the attention span to be able to sit and think and contemplate and understand is vastly going to be very different. So Rabbi Rosenblatt pointed out, you know, he thinks that one of the greatest heroines of Jewish history is? It's a very interesting thought when he said it. He said Yocheved. Who's Yocheved? Yocheved was Moshe's mother. Think about this for a moment. Moshe is born, and Paro is going to take him. When is Paro going to take him? He was found by the daughter of Paro, right, Moshe? And the daughter of Paro is going to take him back. When? As soon as he finishes nursing. When this child grows up, and his mother's not needed to nurse him, where is he going? Back to the palace. How much time does she have to inculcate him with every value that she wants, with the tradition that she has from her father, who's Yaakov Avinu, back to Abraham? How much time does she have to sing to him? Right? Okay, so a little bit longer, maybe a little longer. Right? They talk about all the stories. I'm sure you've heard stories of the Holocaust, where after the war, the rabbis would go into the monasteries and they would walk up and down the aisles singing Shema Yisrael. And the children who heard that from their mothers, who heard that from their fathers, would start, Mama? Tati? They heard. There's something that gives them something. So I don't mean to scare you, but I want to leave you with two thoughts for today. We have a few minutes today. Two major themes. I know this is a series, so you hopefully have a chance to have a lot of opportunities. I'm not going to be focused much tonight on practical parenting tools in the sense of how to speak or things like that. I do workshops like that in Tocco Hills that are like 4 or 5 hour things, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on that. And we're going to get to some practical stuff. That I do commit to giving you some practical stuff. I want to give two overarching ideals that we'll be able to use and put into practice. So number one, and not to scare you, we live in a world that by the time our children are 9 or 10, our ability to inculcate them with our values will be competing with the world out there in a way that none of us dealt with when we were 9 or 10. They will be exposed to a world that is at their fingertips. I don't know that there'll be a cell phone around in 2 years that doesn't have that where you can disable the internet from. It's just part of it. They will have it in their hands, and they'll figure out how to get around every parental control that we can come up with. It's silly in a day and age that we live in to think that by the time our children are 9 or 10, that they will not be exposed to things that we were not exposed to by the time we were 25. That's the world they live in. Now, the world out there is a very tempting place. There are a lot of really, really interesting flashing lights out there. And they're not taken away from us when we're 9 or 10. They're still in our home, but our home is now competing against a lot of things. Things that we don't necessarily value. And it's silly to even talk about keeping our kids. It's a joke. They're going to be exposed to it, which gives us a little bit of a head start. And then we're up against some serious, serious competition. Now, the question is like, how would you parent if you knew your child was being taken from you at 9? It's not a real question, but it's something to think about when you think about planting seeds, because there's a time when their attention span, it's a different world. So what's the message out of that? It's proactive parenting. There was a day and age where you could say, if I live in a good community, and my parent, a good friend, so they will instill them with our values. I don't know if any of you have children who are in 7th, 8th grade already, I'm not sure. They're exposed to the world. We can't fool ourselves and say that, oh, because they're in this community and because they go to this school, therefore, X, Y, or Z, there's no way to assume that. And therefore, what's needed is active planning. Now, the fact that you're here today is step one. It's proactive. It's working on, this is the time that I have, and I'm going to inculcate and instill them. So the first thought that I just want to leave you with is the value of that. We can't think for a moment it will happen naturally. If we are not actively instilling values, goals, ideals into our children, what we're competing against is way too strong. We can win that battle. Jewish history has proven that. But it starts young, and we have to be proactive. That's thought number one, just as an introduction. Thought number two. How do we do that? Very nice. Okay, spent 5 minutes on this theme. Great. How do we do that? So the Kuzke Rebbe, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes of Europe, was asked by one of his Hasidim. He said, Rebbe, I want to make sure that my child values learning Torah. That's what I want for my child. That he thinks it's important, that he does it, he values it. How can I instill that in my child? And of course, what did the Kuzke Rebbe said? He said, do it yourself. I want to add to what he said, and then I want to add to something that he said. I want to finish with, he said more than just that, and then I want to add to what he said. He said, learn yourself. Because if you're just worried about making sure that your child values it, you know what you're going to raise? You're going to raise a child who's going to worry that his child values learning. Think about that. That's a Rebbe adding a line. In other words, we all can come up with on our own, well, if I want my child to value, I need to do it. But think about what you're raising by worrying about your child having a certain thing. Our children pick up on that. They're going to pick up on, okay, so my job as a parent is to worry that my child does, and it completely skips and misses the essence of what it is that we want. Let me add to that. I want to add to that from a Rebbe of mine in Eretz Yisrael in Baltimore, who raised the following question. There's a very interesting Gemara, a piece of the Talmud that says that even if the Torah had never been given, we would have learned a lot of traits from the animal world. So says the Gemara. We would have looked at the ant, and we would have learned self-sufficiency. The Gemara says we would have looked at the cat, and we would have learned tznius, propriety. We would have looked at the dove, we would have learned chastity, and decency from the hen. Well, there's a list of traits that if you look at the animal kingdom, you would learn certain things. And Rabbi Eisenman, my Rebbe in Baltimore, pointed out there's something missing from the list. You know what's not learned from the animal kingdom? It's parenting class. So it's a little giveaway. Parenting. Chastity, yes. Tznius. We would have learned self-sufficiency from the ants. But we would not have learned parenting. This is interesting. Because, you know, there are a lot of examples from the animal kingdom about parenting that I would have thought we could have learned a lot from. Anyone familiar with what Rashi says about the eagle? How does the eagle carry its young? On its mouth. On its back. The eagle carries its young on its back. And Rashi comments, I think he says in two different places, why does the eagle carry its young on its back? Because the eagle says, I soar above all the other birds. The only thing I fear are humans and the arrows that they shoot at me. Let the arrow pierce me rather than my young. So I'm not going to carry my young below in my feet, in my clutches. I want to protect it and carry it on my back. Let me take the arrow and not my child. You value that trait as a parent? How many parents wouldn't step in front of a car, Rahmanal Islam, heaven forbid, to protect their child? You learn that from an eagle. The Gemara doesn't say you learn that from an eagle. The Gemara doesn't say that. Everyone familiar with the emperor penguins? And those of you who have children have seen the, Happy Feet? Right? What do they do in Happy Feet? They trek the male and female penguins for a month deep out of the water into the ice crevices, treacherous hills, the works, to mate. Female lays the egg. The male stays with the egg for up to 2 months without a single source of food, just himself in the cold of the night of Antarctica, while the female then goes back for a month to the sea, gorges herself on fish to return a month back to her male partner and the egg which has by then hatched to be able to feed it. How about that for a dad? That's pretty impressive. For 2 months, he stays alone with the newborn while mom is gorging herself on fish to be able to support the baby. Altruism? Self-sacrifice? You know what the hornet? The wasp, yes. What the wasp does when it mates, lays its eggs, fills the air, the nest with food, seals it up, and flies away, never to see its young. But provides everything that the newborn wasps will need, even though she herself will never even see it. There's a lot to learn. Altruistic principles from the animal kingdom. Asks Rabbi Eisenman, why don't we learn from them? Why does the Talmud tell us we can learn all sorts of traits from the animal kingdom?
I have to learn that stuff all the time. I get my kids food.
Yeah, right? So why don't we learn this stuff?
And we're blacking in the house.
Yeah. Right. So that's what we do. We're blacking in the house and we leave and go on vacation. Maybe it's a good thing that we don't learn. Okay, I hear that. So he had a different answer. Right. But that. Why don't we learn from them? So he had a very interesting perspective. The animal kingdom is ingrained with an innate sense of self-preservation. And that each one of these animal species does what it does because there's a drive of the next generation. I need to survive, and I need my child to survive in order that the species is perpetuated. Yeah? Humans are not penguins. We are not here to survive for our children. Think about this, because this is the thought. If you come out of here with only one thought, this is it. We are not here for our children, and our children are not here for us. Each one of us was created in the image of God with our own mission in life. And our mission includes, if we are so blessed, to have children and to raise them. But we have to meet our Maker after 120 years, and God will say to us, how'd you do in life? Who did you become? What are your traits like? Part of that will be, how are you as a parent? The altruism of the animal kingdom takes the parents out of the equation. There's no growth, there's no struggle, there's no difficulty. It's just, I will give up myself for my child because that's my role in life. That's, and nature smiles. Not so with humans. Parenting is a struggle for us. That's not news, right? It's difficult. It's really hard. I like to, this is not a marriage class, but it ties in exactly with it. So parenting and marriage, they go hand in hand. When God created, if you ever think about it, I'm sure you've often done this at many, many times. Anyone who's been married has thought about this, like, whose idea was this anyway? Like, really? Whose idea was it that you put a man and a woman in a house together and think that that makes sense for either one of the two of them? They're like the most different creatures. It is one struggle after another. It's hard, marriage. There's a woman today called me, she got married 2 months ago, and she called me today that we were discussing the first halachic matter, and then she like snuck right into like, I think we need some marriage counseling, like things are like just falling apart, like no, you just got married, you don't need marriage counseling just yet. It's hard.
Later, maybe.
Like, it's supposed to be hard. Why is it supposed to be hard? Because God created us to perfect ourselves, to be created in the image of God. We're not born in the image. I mean, physically, there's not, like, we grow, we develop into that. What greater form is there to work on yourself than to have to think about somebody else who's of a different gender than you all the time? It forces a human being to deal with things that he would never think about dealing with otherwise. And when we think about that, and we deal with that, and we struggle with that, with the sensitivity that it takes to think about somebody, we grow as people. We are different human beings over the course of our marriage. If we're working on our marriage, we're struggling with our marriage, we're learning what it means to be sensitive to somebody else, we become better, different, godly people. What greater thing can you add to that mix than children? Mm-hmm. Not because it's easy. Like, sometimes we get a lot of nachas. They look great. They're bathed and clean for Shabbos, and they're wearing something really cute. There's no greater joy. But the moments of joy are like interspersed with like a lot of. It's hard. It's just. It's hard, right? Why are you sitting here? Because someone said, let's have a parenting class because it's really easy and it's a walk in the park. No, that's not why you're here. And I'm here because I'm not an expert, because I have my own children and I struggle with them as much as everybody else. And just learning along the way and just trying to share some of that. We're not penguins. And the idea of parenting is to grow personally. Personally. Now, we have to raise our children. We have to inculcate them with the values and the skills that we want. But don't ever stop recognizing that the moment your child, you want to throw your child out the window because they won't stop screaming at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's a growth moment for us. How do I handle a screaming infant at 2 o'clock in the morning? How do I handle a screaming 3-year-old at 7 o'clock at night? How do I handle a 10-year-old who is driving me up the wall? I'm part of this equation. When I get upstairs after 120, they're not gonna say like, how did you parent that situation? They're gonna say, how did you behave in that situation? And it's a aspect, I think about this all the time in my parenting, because I have found, as I'm sure you have, every single day in my parenting life is a challenge. Not a day goes by without a moment in which I would say, if God wasn't watching me, I would behave a little bit differently right now. There's not a day that goes by where I think to myself, you're being watched. I need that because I don't want to end up in the news the way I see other people who don't believe that they're being watched by God in heaven. There's because I would. Listen, I'm also human. We're part of the equation. Our own personal growth and development is part of the equation. So when the Kutzker Rebbe said, you want your child to value learning Torah, you learn Torah. You value it. It's not just modeling. Modeling is a interesting word. If you say we need to model good behavior, the connotation really is learn how to be an actor. We should all go to acting school instead of parenting classes. We'll learn what it's like to model a good marriage, and we'll learn what it's like to model a good parent, and we'll pretend all day, and our children will see great modeling. It's not modeling. It's being. If you be in a great marriage, and you'll be a good person, you'll be modeling good parenting. But just don't take yourself out of the equation. You know, there's one more thing, and I'll get to some practical thoughts. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in Ethics of the Fathers. The Mishnah states, don't judge a person until... You can finish that for me? So you get to his shoes. And that doesn't say shoes. Doesn't say shoes. Anyone know what the actual language is? Their place. Excellent. Don't judge your friend until you get to his place. The general meaning is understood, sort of like in his shoes, meaning don't judge him until you've experienced all the things that he's experienced. It's easy for us to sit wherever we sit in life and look at somebody else and say, well, I would never behave that way. I would never do that. Wait till you get live his life and hold up judgment. One of the early commentators writes, don't judge a person until you get to his place. You know what that means, when they get to his place? It means his place, his house. You see somebody in the street, you see somebody at work, nice guy. They're so refined. They speak so nicely with respect to everybody. Don't judge anyone until you're in their house. And you're a fly on the wall. And they don't know that you're there. And then you see how they behave. Then you can judge them. Guess who's judging us all the time? Yes, and?
My mother.
Yes. You need to get her out of the house, buddy. Our children, they see us at our worst. They see it at late at night. They see us in the morning. They see us when we're tired at 5 o'clock falling asleep on the couch. They see us for who we are. And parenting is about personal growth. If we will pay attention to our personal growth in those moments, then we become parents that they will see, they themselves, that's what Friedman was talking about. Because they're the ones who are going to be eulogizing us after 120. They're the ones who are going to see us in our home. They're the ones who are going to know us better than anyone else. And it's a growth process. And it might seem odd that in a parenting class I haven't mentioned anything about parenting yet. Like nothing. We're going to in a minute. But that there's the idea that as an opening to the series, which is just a phenomenal class, I'm so glad this is taking place, is don't lose the focus on it's all about parenting to my child. It's really a lot about ourselves and our own personal growth within the process. Okay, those are my two introductions. Let's talk a little bit practical, putting these two things together. Number one, it's got to be proactive. It's got to be an active engagement of, I have limited time. My child is going to be in 7th grade before I know it, and if they're not already in 7th grade, it's happening fast. And I need to have a plan. What am I doing to instill the values that I want? Because it's not going to happen naturally in the world that we live in today. And number two, where's my role in terms of fitting into this? In terms of my personal growth and knowing that that's what's going to take. A couple of practical things just to throw out. I know that I want to leave you with some practical times and ideas. Number one, there's a magic of stories. Stories. Telling stories. Probably most of you don't view yourselves as storytellers. I know, I certainly didn't. I was forced into it through my job and working with the preschool, and lo and behold discovered, I also can tell a story. If you would have asked me when I started, I would have never thought so. Have you ever paid attention when Rabbi Friedman gives a sermon, and he's talking and talking and talking and talking and whatever, and then he says, and just the other day, and all of a sudden every head pops up. I can tell you as a speaker, I know that. Talk, and like no one's listening, and you can see that no one's listening. You start telling a story, everybody's listening. There's a power in story. It draws your attention as soon as you start telling a story. Guess who loves to hear stories? Children love it. They love it, they love it, they love it. You know when they love it the most? They like that, but they like it even better. They like it when they're supposed to go to sleep and you start telling them a story. You have a captive audience because they know they're really supposed to be sleeping. And you have arranged, because we're the parents, that bedtime is going to be at a certain time, but I know that this is time. It is invaluable because stories are where we pass on our traditions. We pass off our values. Don't underestimate how strong the power of the story is. You can make up stories if you're of that creative type. It's great. As what I do in the preschool, I make up stories about two characters, Dove the Bear and Ari the Lion. And because I'm talking to preschoolers, so they have all sorts of adventures in which there's only one, spoonful of vanilla ice cream left and they both want it. How do they handle that? Well, the kids learn about sharing or taking turns, whether or not one wants to play with Lego, one wants to play soccer. And they're not, because I'm not talking about them, I'm talking about Dove the Bear and Ari the Lion. And as children get older, tell stories. We are a tradition of stories. There are hundreds of thousands of stories out there. I'll give you guys some homework. The Birnbaums, they're really in charge over here. They're going to give you resources of stories, whether or not it's stories of great Jewish leaders, great Jewish values, stories from the Talmud, stories from the Bible, stories about people. We pass on and instill values, because guess who else is telling stories? Dora the Explorer is telling stories. And the big purple, what's his name?
Barney
is telling stories. And when they get older, every single cartoon they watch and every film, they're also telling stories. And some of those Disney, Pixar, they're not really our value system. They're not. They're cartoons. Everybody gets to watch them. And guess who's telling our children stories? The culture around us. No, we live in America, thank God, we're protected and we're safe. But if we're not telling stories, they're getting them from elsewhere. Popular culture, forget about. And I'm not even talking, I'm just talking about like Disney movies is telling a story. So if you think you're not a storyteller, learn to become a storyteller. Because we need to get those values in. It's not as hard as you think. Your kids will think you're really good. Until they get older, and then they'll realize they're... But they'll add it to the list of things they'll tell their therapist. You don't have to worry about that. When they get down to that, he wasn't a good storyteller, you know you're towards the end, then you don't have to worry any longer. But it's a trait worth learning, and even if your kids are older, there's something about a story that's worth sharing. Shabbos. Shabbos meals... I'll just talk about myself. If I don't plan in advance how is my Shabbos meal going to go with my children, let me describe for you my Shabbos meal. This is the rabbi talking. Shabbos meal, but whether it's Friday night Shabbos, it doesn't make a difference. Kiddush, kids are still there. Wash, have some challah, my kids are still there. I turn around and they're not. And they don't come back until dessert. And then we bench. And then if I'm lucky and I'm still awake, but they're gone with her. It's just... If most of the times I'll collapse, and if I don't, I've already lost them because they've been already busy for 2 hours. They're like involved in something, and the entire Shabbos day from a child's perspective, not really inspiring. It's really not. Now, I don't expect my child to sit at the table for 2 hours or 3 hours. I don't expect my guests to sit there for 3 hours. But what's the plan? When do I engage my child? If all my child thinks they do is they have to come to the table and read their Dvar Torah and they're done, they're not engaged. Check. I read that. Do they know what they read? They know what they read. Do I have a story prepared? Do I have a story prepared for my child? If I don't, well then I'm not going to reach them. Do I have a question? I have older children. My oldest is 12 and 10 and 8. They can answer questions. Do I have an age-appropriate question prepared for my child? I put this mostly on the men in the room. Women's job mostly, everyone can have, this is stereotypical, it's fine if it's different in your house, it doesn't make a difference. If my wife spends Friday afternoon preparing the food to eat, and she has to do that because if it doesn't get done, then we have nothing to eat, and how can I say, well, I didn't have the time, I didn't have a chance to prepare anything. Well, what happens at the table if I don't prepare anything? What happens to the table? It's lost. The table is lost, the Shabbos afternoon is lost.
It's like any other night.
It's like any other night. That takes energy. But I have them. I know they're going to be there for something. I know they're going to be there for Kiddush. I know they're going to wash. And I know they're coming back for dessert. That much I know. So when they're there, what do I do with them? I play bingo with my kids. You don't have to be like a rabbi and look up things online. Play bingo with my kids. But you know, the answers to the bingo questions are age-appropriate questions of things that I want them to know about. And they will play. My 12-year-old can't help herself. The game is geared towards the 5 and 6-year-old. She can't help herself because there's a game going on at the table and she gets involved. I do that for the Pesach Seder also, by the way. For play a game of bingo, you go through the whole Haggadah, the whole story, through asking questions through bingo. But it requires effort and energy to actually think before you sit down on Friday night. You don't need to be, the activity needs to last 3 minutes, but that the children know there's going to be something. Along those same lines, we are busier today. Here I'm saying that, like, you know, our children, they're getting things from all of us. We have to spend, we're busier than ever. We're multitasking. We're like trying to find time for them. In that same vein of Shabbos, there are times that we have with them that we can take advantage of if we think about it. Anyone here drive a carpool? Do you know that your child is a captive, literally, for, it might be 3 minutes. My house, it's our days where my children go to school, is 3 minutes. That's when I miss the light. 3 minutes. But you know what? I have my child for 3 minutes every day. And if we sit in silence, or if I'm on the phone, I just lost valuable time. Because let's be realistic. How much quality time do we have with our children? 3 minutes. It's just me and them. But you know what? I'm not prepared. And I want to return a phone call. Or I just want to have a minute moment of silence. And what a waste. What a waste that 3 minutes went by where they couldn't go anywhere. They have no gadgets in their hand. There's nothing doing. You give a 4-year-old a bath. They're stuck there. You're stuck there. Like, we all dream of this, like, quality time. We're going to go out for dinner together. I'm going to take my child out. Like, I still have this dream, and it hasn't happened in 6 years. That, like, once a week, I'm going to take a different child out, and we're going to go out for ice cream or for dinner. It doesn't happen. 6 years, my wife and I have been talking every August when we start the school year. Okay, there's a schedule, and you're going to do this one. And yet, but there are moments that if we would only pay attention to them and be aware of them, this is where, you know, Rabbi Rosenblatt was saying, when he has his children, he would say to them, he met a kid in school, is that person a nice person? They have friends. Are they nice? Do they speak nicely? No, that's a question you ask a child. What does that say to the child when you ask a child, at whatever age they are, oh, you're playing with so-and-so, do they speak nicely?
Concentrating on the value.
This is a value that I have. Are they nice to their friends? Now, we of course have Lashon Hara issues, and I don't mean to say like that. It's a value that says, I'm going to tell you, as you go through life choosing your friends, these are the things that we value. That a child should be able to say, no. Say like, well, you know, it's a conversation. There are conversation starters that we can have from 3 and 4 all the way on up, in which we instill values by simply talking about certain things. But it takes a lot of energy from us as parents, and we know, I know none of you I also don't have it. I'm only waking up because I'm talking. The fact that any of you have your eyes open is really just amazing to me, because it's like 8:30, and it's like at the end of the day, it's done. So in the day and age that we live in, those are the moments that when you think, like, parenting isn't easy, it takes energy. When should I invest my energy? Well, what are my goals? What do I want to talk to my children about that when we have a carpool, when I'm driving them somewhere, that there's actually a conversation that takes place in the car. Because that's what we have with our children. Let's be real. I would tell you, but this is unrealistic. I'm just going to throw it out there, even though I don't believe that any of us can do it. Imagine not checking your cell phone when an email comes in while you're in the middle of a conversation with your child. It's just a joke. I don't really expect any of you to really try that. I mean, really, that's like silly to even mention. But I just want to mention how crazy it is that it's a joke to even mention. Like, I see this all, I do it all the time. It is so... What's that? Right, yeah. So I don't have that yet because my oldest has very serious, she just got her cell phone. But where does the children learn? Where do they learn that from? Because they see us doing it to them all the time, in the middle of talking to them, and we check an email, and we think that, oh, I'm just checking. But imagine if in the middle of my talk... That's not a real conversation. And a child learns, the youth thought it was just a second. I just checked for a second. Just like we're teaching values, we just, like, I'm talking to my child, and whatever it was more of it. And if you just sent off a 3-second response... There's very strong messages that are being sent. So I'm not even going there. Forget. I know. I have to mention it, even though it's like ridiculous. But like that's where we are. Like, so those 3 minutes in the car, what's going to be with the Shabbos table? If there's no preparation, you can forget about it. There's no way that it happens. Lastly, I just want to mention one other thing. There's one last story. I'll tell you a passage that takes place in the Talmud. There were two great sages, Rava and Abaye. To the leading sages of the generation. And the Talmud says when they were little children, Rava and Abaye, they were both sitting in front of their Rebbe. And the Rebbe asks them, who do we make brachos to? Who are we blessing when we say a blessing over food? And they both said, what do you mean? To God. The Rebbe asks them, where's God? Where is he? Rava pointed to the ceiling. Abaye, the little children, went outside and pointed to the sky. And said to them, we both grow up to be great sages. What do you take from such a passage? Dr. David Pelkovitz, who's a well-known psychologist up in New York, says a very interesting take on the passage in the Talmud. Children think very differently. Some of them think more creatively, some more concretely, and at different stages are always different like that. Where is God? What a big question. Adults, you know, tough question to answer. Children, even more difficult. One child can point to the ceiling. The creativity is there to say, yeah, I'm just pointing to the ceiling, just means the heavens. Another child can't do that. Can't point to the ceiling. That doesn't make sense. You have to go outside and point to the sky. Very different approaches that children have to being able to understand spiritual things. That which we adults have difficulty with, and to be sensitive to the stages that children are at and the type of mind that each different child has, to be able to introduce spiritual values, concepts of God, reward, punishment, all of that is encompassed in Judaism, into the mind of a child. Some of them need it more concrete, some are more creative, abstract, and in different stages, different children need different things. That's a general broad stroke. I don't know your children, I barely know most of you, to be able to know what your child needs. But it's something to be aware of, that when it comes to inculcating those spiritual values, every child, every stage is different. And being aware of what do they need. Do they need to be outside to see the sky? Or can they sit in a room and just point to the ceiling to get the same value? Those are some thoughts. I have another 2 minutes here before I have to run back. It's difficult if there's any questions or comments. But what I really, when you go home, think like, what did he say? He said, proactive. Tell your stories. Because if we don't tell our story, someone else will. You have to be proactive in telling your story. Number two, we're a player in parenting. We grow, we develop, we struggle, and if we will become great people, then we will model great parenting. But we can't be left out of the equation. We're not a penguin and we're not a wasp. We're humans. We have our own missions and our own struggles. And every time you want to throw your child against a wall, think, here's my growth moment. It's about me. How am I going to respond when I'm frustrated and tired? How am I going to do that? And as we grow and respond, we'll teach our children how to respond when they're tired and frustrated, too. Those are the two thoughts I leave you with. I thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.